All right, here we are. Yo, everybody, here is another episode of the Mind Body Marathon. On today's episode, I have my beautiful wife, Samwa, who was with me for the Cologne Marathon, which is what the episode is about. And that was October 5th in 2025 is when I ran.
That's crazy. That was last week.
It was already.
It feels like it's been a month already.
I know.
From everything our week has entailed.
That is true. And it was a crazy trip too, because we were only in Cologne for like a day and a half. And just did a ton, including a marathon.
It's always how we seem to roll.
But yeah, it was a great race. I mean, I think like we're going to cover a lot of topics about it and kind of my personal experience, but also about the race itself. One of the things that was so interesting to me was the history of the city. I was shocked at how, you know, I mean, I would talk to patients and talk to people about, oh, I'm running Cologne, and people that had been there were like, oh man, that cathedral is really awesome. And
yeah, that was amazing.
And it's really cool. And it's like, yeah, you get there and you're like, Jesus, that thing is huge.
And apparently we missed a chance to go to the basement of the cathedral, because that's like a thing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was some kind of cellars, or I don't know what my brother said it was, but we should have gone to the basement.
Yeah. That's interesting. I didn't know that, but like, basically, it was built, what, it took over 600 years to build, and it was finished like, what, 500 years ago or something like that?
Not the historian. I don't know.
It's
But I do remember you telling me it was the only church that stayed standing in Germany throughout World War II.
Yeah, it's one of the only churches that survived. You know, Hitler tore down a lot of the churches, and then so I hear, but this one was sort of a pivotal spot for both the Allies and the Axis in terms of a landmark.
Yeah, just to keep track of where they were at.
We were about 45 minutes outside of the city, and we could already
see
the spires. Yeah.
That was insane.
Yeah, because it's just really flat around that area. And so you could tell, like, during the war, like, they definitely
would be able to spot it from far away, and kind of have it be like their North Star sort of thing to know which way they're headed. So
that was, I found that to be very fascinating. And it, you know, if you look at all the war photos, of just type in Cologne after World War II, it's unreal the amount
all
of
the
like
rubble
everywhere. There's
the
no building standing, and then there's just a church. Like, all the bridges are into the Rhine River. Like, there's literally rubble everywhere except for the church. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So anyways, if you get a chance to go there, there's a ton of history. Definitely would suggest doing it. But one of the things that I was shocked about was, it's a large race. There was about 37,000 people. It wasn't all marathoners. There was a half and there was a relay. But on the day of the race, there was about 37,000 people. But obviously the vast majority of that was marathoners. They did start a half earlier in the day,
which was weird.
They started the half at like
2 hours earlier.
Yeah, like 8 or
usually
something.
Usually it's the opposite.
So, and then the full started at 10:30. So it was a later start, kind of like Boston. And
which I love.
It was just wild. You know, one of the weird things though, is so it felt the race itself felt very, I mean, it was like a large marathon. It's probably a top 5 sized marathon I've ever done. But what was really interesting is they only had 3 corrals. Oh. And so that means there was like almost like 10,000 people per corral.
The thing that I thought interesting as a spectator was their lack of barricades.
Yes.
For like, where, like, they would have like this random little, I don't know, like half of a block barricaded, but then you could easily just walk around it and be in the way. And there was actually, a matter of fact, towards the end, when I saw you right around the, 40K mark. And this guy like was crossing the street and there was no barricade. So you runners are just coming right down in between two different piles of, like, there was the line of people that were watching you guys going out for the 25K. And then just on the other side of the road was us watching you guys coming back around the 40K mark. And this guy was trying to cross over to see the 25K mark area. And he was like looking down on his phone and starts to cross. And literally like a runner almost ran, like basically ran into him and then ended up having to like have to catch himself and run around him. And at that point,
dude, that's it was the like, worst thing, 40K yeah. into a marathon.
And that would have been the people that were probably running right around like a 2:30 time, you know, yeah. which is like, holy crap, dude, like pay attention. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
It was so bad. So that was interesting to me to have it, to know that it was such a big race and how little they were monitoring like the,
yeah.
the spectators and keeping them away from, you know, where you guys were running and all of that.
Yeah. It's interesting because I've run Valencia last year and that is a pretty well-known fast marathon. This race had quite a bit more spectators for sure. I mean, I thought that it had a lot more energy, a lot more spectators. It was just as flat. The weather was not as good, obviously, as Valencia, but it was like mid to high 40s Fahrenheit and
raining on and off.
Raining on and off, and then pretty windy as well. There was a couple sections where you were like definitely getting hit with some wind.
Yeah, who knew the Germans could bring the party like that, right? But all that emotion, dude, and energy.
I know, that's the thing. It's like it was so shocking, and like since we've learned that they have like their own kind of carnival in that city, in that area. And it's like in February, but like with that being said, they have this like jester feel where a lot of them like dress up like clowns and like a bunch of different things. And so they had a lot of people dress up. They had a lot of people like just acting goofy and just being really interesting with that. And so,
yeah, when we were waiting,
I was pretty shocked by the level of crowds.
Yeah. When we were waiting for you guys right around the 12K, 13K spot where we saw you, there was this one girl that was cheering right by us. And she was cheering for everybody. It was so fun to see her. She just kept like cheering up a storm and, you know, saying things in English, saying things in German, and just so much energy. It was great to see that for sure.
Yeah, that's the other thing I wanted to mention was one of the things that was pretty cool from my perspective was they, you know, like a lot of major marathons, they put your name on your bib. And so I probably, of any race I've ever run, including in the States, I heard my name more than any of them. Like, for some reason, everybody was all about saying my name.
That's awesome.
And it was cool to hear them, like, say it, like, Leao.
I was probably a little sexist in that range, because the only people's name I would cheer was the women's.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in the beginning, because there wasn't very many of them. You know, like, waiting for you, there's not many women running sub-3. So I will only see like a handful of women. I'd be like, yeah, you badass. Like, yeah. You're running a sub-3. Let's go. So I would cheer for the women.
Yeah. So let's go back to the start. So the start was interesting. So it had, like I said, there was like definitely thousands of people per corral. So it was huge. And I kind of was taking my time kind of getting into the start. And then, I realized with like 5 minutes to go, like, all right, I should start making my way into the crowd. I was under the impression there was multiple entry points, but no, there was only an entry point in the back of the corral, which would have been a nightmare because then you're back about like 8,000
people.
Yeah, like 8,000-10,000 people deep, rather than like where I should probably be, like maybe 2 or 3 rows back from the very front, based on the caliber of the field, because they were separating the elites. So anyways, I make my way out of the way of the front. And then I realize, oh crap, they are actually like, no, there's only an entry point in the back. And so I'm like, screw it, man. I'm just going to hop this fence. And then this German guy turns around and he just starts going crazy.
You got to follow the rules.
And like,
there's a way to do things.
I know in Germany, they're like that. And he starts yelling, order, fucking order, order. And then it was just so scary to hear him like yelling that and just screaming. He was like wrenching his hands and like, and so I was like, all right, whatever. I'm just jumping the fence. And he just started screaming it. And so it was so intense. So then I'm like, all right, so I'm making my way back a little bit farther. And then me and a couple other guys were like in the same situation. So now we're about a minute left before the race is about to go off. And then me and a couple other guys were speaking pretty good English and we're standing there. And then I'm like, let's just go to the fence. And then there was this nice old lady who was like,
did you guys pay?
Talking with some other guy. And then we were like, hey, look, what is that over there? What are they doing over there? And we created this, like, you know, definitely like sense of urgency. And she looked over and then we just hopped the fence. And then once we hopped the fence, she saw us doing it. She turned around. She was just like, gave us a snarl, like, dang it, you got me. It was like her one job and like we totally snaked her on it.
Sounds like a story from your college days of all the shenanigans you used to do.
So then I get in there into the race. I would definitely say the start was very, very, very crowded. Like it did not separate well. Which is why I rolled my ankle.
Did you give them feedback that they should do more?
No, trails? I've yet to do that. You should do that feedback, but I'll tag them in this episode. So maybe they'll hear it. And that's why I rolled my ankle like a minute into the race, because I kind of just kept getting pushed out to the side, and I'm like, all right, that's fine. I'll be on the outside a little bit because I'm passing so many people. Because I ended up about a third of the way back through the first corral. And I really should have been quite a bit farther up. So I was just trying not to make any sudden moves and all that, but I was just kind of slowly making my way up. And then there was a section where the sidewalk was like low, and it quickly went high. And then I just didn't read that in time relative to the amount of people like around me. And then I rolled my ankle and smacked my bad ankle. Like I smacked it on the side of the curb and then also rolled it. And I was like instantly like, oh my God, like that definitely is the last thing that should have happened that early. Like, because again, I hadn't run a marathon in basically 9 months because of same ankle. Because it was right after Valencia of last year. So anyways, I just slept it off and I'm just like running and just trying not to focus on it. And obviously it came back to bite me later.
And I was stressed about you the whole time because you did not eat enough prior to that race.
Yeah, I was definitely all, I mean, like we were massive tourists all over Europe. We were walking around all the time. And that morning I just was like, ate a bar and I was not prepared. Yeah.
It's amazing you get sub threes like that.
But yeah, so like because of the ankle, I'd say about mile 18, 20, I really started to notice my form was faltering and I started to get a lot of pain in the ankle and even on the other side of the ankle. And at that point I kind of realized my form was really bad and I started kind of cramping pretty bad. And my pace fell off, you know, because of that. And as you said, the nutrition side of it wasn't very good. I, for the life of me, couldn't find any of the caffeinated Mortons. I literally didn't have time to go to the store to buy them.
That might be the only race expo in the whole world that doesn't sell Mortons.
There was no Morton at the expo. And then like everybody I knew had expired Mortons. So I'm like, what the heck?
Morton needs to touch base with Cologne because it's bigger than Boston and they don't have a presence.
Yeah, it was so weird. There was Morton packets everywhere on the course that people had used, but
couldn't get one at the expo.
Yeah. It was so weird. I mean, they had all these definitely like German brands that were promoting things like, but you know, I was used to that, you know, and then because of that, I had replaced it with some other types of goos and things like that I hadn't had in a while. And so that sort of jacked my gut up a little bit. So the end was basically the last 10K was basically me, if I pushed it too hard, I would spasm or I would get nauseous.
So basically, like one of the if you two. Listen to this episode, it's the things not to do when running a marathon.
Yeah. And that's just the thing. I got like, I was really locked into the zone for a long time. And there's just this massive sense of denial of what I was experiencing. And then I got to like 18, 20K or 20 miles. And I was like, because basically I wanted to get to like 30K. And once I get to 30K, I'm like, I can start doing the math on like what I need to do per mile to get under three and really just start like kind of bailing water at that point.
When like, do you start runner math for your marathon where it's like, okay, I only have 20 miles to go, which is 4 or 5 miles. I can do 5 miles.
The first time I do a calculation in the marathon is at half. Like I don't even let my brain think about what's happening. I just try to keep a loose ballpark on, so in the international races, I keep a loose ballpark on 5Ks. And I don't actually like in the States anymore running mile per mile. That kind of really annoys me. It feels too quick, but Ks feel way too quick. So then I just go off 5Ks. So basically every 20 minutes, I'm sort of looking at a split and I don't look at a split prior to that. But when I got, when I get halfway, obviously I'm calculating at that point. And then I try to get to 30K at a reasonable time before I really start kind of calculating what I need to do to kind of hit a final time. And obviously over there, I was trying to hit a sub three and I was way under it. I was at 2:53 pace at half, but then the last 10K was just really, really hard. I think about mile 20-ish, because again, it's hard to tell, like, because they don't have mile marks on that course. But around that time, I was like, because it was about 32K, I was like, I snapped out of my zone and I just started laughing. I'm like, I do feel this bad. I was like, I do actually feel this bad. And it just like hit me. It was just like, oh my God, what am I in for? And I didn't think it would get as bad as it got. Like, I didn't think the last 5K would hurt that bad. And I would just let like hundreds of people pass me. And I just, you know, was doing everything I could to just stay mentally locked in.
For what it's worth, I never realized you were feeling as bad as you were when you ran past me. You kind of looked normal. I mean, I saw that your time had dropped, so I figured something had kicked in. But I was thinking then at that point, it was more the nutrition side of it that must have gotten to you, which probably was part of it. But you looked normal.
That's funny.
Running yeah. past me.
And that's a good thing because there was chaos inside of me. Massive chaos. And that was the other thing too. Like, I was in a lot of different packs during the race and nobody said anything. And so usually at marathons, like, people are kind of BSing early on and just kind of like just chatting it up and where you're from and stuff like that. And like, nobody said a word. And
so you had all Corrales from Disney people.
Yeah. Is that what they're like?
Yeah. Remember we had that conversation. Disney people is funny. Like, if you're on Corral A and even when you do the loops and stuff and you're like, yeah, you get nothing. Buzzards. Nobody even high fives you back. There's nothing. But then you get to Corral like C and slower and everybody's just having a party.
Yeah. I could see that. Everybody's just so focused, but that's not the place to be.
Yeah.
But even still, like, I mean, obviously I didn't speak German, but pretty much everybody in Germany speaks English. So I could have tried talking to people. I just didn't. I was just starting so early on that I would just like, just stay locked in. But the course was good. I mean, the course was definitely beautiful. It was fast. It was flat. Like I said, it was windy, but you did hit, it's kind of like, the course reminded me of Chicago a bit in terms of the design where you kind of go north, south, and then west. And then, it went through all these cool little like nooks and crannies in the town, like classic, like German, like buildings, like where they're locked together and just like cute cafes everywhere and just people partying and having a good time. And then a couple of the times we ran through some college campuses and they were having a good time partying as well. And you could definitely tell by the change in music, like what area you were in. But the one, probably the coolest thing that by far the coolest takeaway from this race was, they would do these drum lines under these old bridges, and they just these old stone bridges. So they were just, it was just really contained. It's not like kind of an American bridge where it's just like metal and there's just openings and stuff, metal and concrete. These are like old stone bridges. So when they do the drum lines under it, it is deafening and it is like pounding in your like chest and soul. And so it just
felt, it gets you moving faster, I bet.
It was so cool. It was like war music, essentially. I mean, it just definitely got you all jived up. And so many people, like, you'd hear it coming and you'd turn a corner like, dude, we're going under a bridge. And the people would start speeding up and then you'd feel the pack just start to liven up. And then all of a sudden, like, you're running a bit faster coming out of that. It was just so cool. And I remember under one of the bridges, I kind of like timed it. I was like, I bet you can hear this pretty far out. And of course I didn't have a lot to think about. So it was about a half mile to a K away that I actually still heard the drum line under the bridge.
I wish I'd been in one of the areas to see that.
Yeah.
I liked it.
There's about four of them.
I liked it as a spectator, the course, because it was easy to get to see you a few times, especially since I had Mariah, our taller, with us, who, in spite of what people probably assume from seeing us social media, she does not actually travel great in the sense that she just always wants to be carried and, you know, my leg hurts and all this stuff. So even though you guys might see, she has literally been all over the world, even from one week to the next.
Something like 14 countries or something like that.
I don't know if it's that many, but, and people might assume like, oh, look, she, you know, they travel with her because it's so easy. It's not easy traveling with her. We just do it anyways. And she, yeah, like, especially having her, it was awesome to get to still see you four times, right? Four times throughout the course. And I probably would have been able to do another spot or two if I hadn't had her and I could have moved quicker. So that was a really nice perk as a spectator for the race itself.
Yeah, I've mentioned this in the Valencia episode. I love how the European races do that Tour de France style. Like you said, with the barricades, like, it can be dangerous when people are crossing the road and things like that. But I feel like there's a lot less like casual observers of the marathon. in these cities, and people that are there are like genuinely there to watch the race. And so you don't get some like person that's just out having a cup of coffee and not really sure what the heck's happening and just wandering on the streets. So there's a bit of order to this, but the Tour de France style where they don't have barricades up and then they crowd you. So there was like one section where it got maybe as wide as this table that we're here, which is basically, I don't know what, 5 feet wide. It was pretty condensed, and you kind of had to break down into like double, maybe even closer to single file, but it was deafening and it was so cool. And Glauku said, your brother, said he didn't like that because he like bumped into somebody and like almost knocked somebody down. But that's the whole reason why I did Cologne. Actually, I didn't even mention that. So it was your brother went to school in Cologne.
Which I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew he went to school in Germany. I didn't realize it was in Cologne.
Yeah. So then when we went,
probably because it wasn't, he didn't really go to school there.
It was like a 6 month thing.
It was like his way to like convince my dad to let him travel a bit. And my dad wasn't on board. So he's like, okay, fine. I'll go do this school program there. And then it didn't quite pan out the way that it was supposed to. And he got back to Brazil quicker than he was originally supposed to.
Oh yeah.
And he just did a tour to Europe instead. But
yeah. But so that was his first road marathon. He didn't done his first marathon with you this summer at Burning River.
Yeah.
And he said this road marathon was markedly harder.
Well, he ran it a lot faster too,
yeah.
Which is different.
It is different.
Although, I mean,
but that's the point of the roads,
and everything
yeah.
with the trails and being out and you know, he's super tall. So being like on your feet longer is also harder. So it is a little bit surprising that.
Well, I think the roads just beat you up so much more. They just do.
Yeah.
But,
know.
So that's
those
why we went
stairs
to.
And
you were not even sore after Burning River.
I was too.
Like 2 days. But yeah.
That's so, just because we came here right away and did all kinds of therapy and had you adjust us. Yeah. That's why we were only sore for 2 days.
You know, one of the points I wanted to mention about Cologne too was that, so the Germans spell it K-O-L-N. And
how you thought that was a sponsor.
I know I did. I didn't realize it was the city. I was like, what is this word I keep seeing?
The O has two dots above it too. So
yeah.
That's probably why it's pronounced a little different.
But it's like, it's derived from, Roman language where it was a Roman colony. It was one of the first Roman colonies outside of, Greater
spell
Italy.
Spell the way it's spelled was a Rome.
No, but okay. the word means colony. And then later in the 1800s, cologne was invented there, like the men's perfume. And so that's why
we were joking about that and then looked it up.
And it's actually really, Italian.
Yeah, I was about to say
Italian
that.
Guy.
Because we assumed it would have been invented by an Italian. And then we come to find out it was invented by Italian, but not in Italy.
It was actually in Cologne, Germany. So definitely some cool history there. And it's like one of the, there's still some original Roman structures up in that city, which we didn't really get a chance to explore.
Well, there was the gate that you ran right past. That was a Roman gate thing.
That Mariah was the picture of Mariah mm-hmm. was in. Yeah. See that I didn't.
That was, well, you didn't even realize you ran past the cathedral.
Oh my gosh. I know.
Somehow you missed the cathedral that we could see from 45 miles away.
I was trying not to spill my guts all over the crowd.
But yeah, that was supposed to be an original Roman gate thing too. So, and that was like right around 40K.
Oh my gosh. 41K. Yeah, that's fascinating.
The other thing I thought was interesting, noticing walking around as a spectator, was how many of the signs were in English, like the signs that people make. Cause I'm like, there's no way there's this many Americans running that, you know, like these are all American families that are here to support their people. So I thought that was really interesting that I think I saw way more signs in English, you know, the typical, you know, I don't know, why do all the hot guys run, or you saw that one, but just the typical like funny marathon signs, but they were almost all in English. I feel like for every five that I saw in English, I would see one that was in a different language.
Yeah.
So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. I didn't notice that so much. I only noticed a couple in English, but there was a, like I said earlier, there's a lot of English being spoken there. So, you know, if you're worried about running an international marathon and the language, it's not a thing. There's people from all over the world. And the cool thing about like Valencia was this way too, where when you get people from literally all over the world, the common language is English. And so, you know, if you're with a bunch of different Europeans, like Italian and French and German, they want to all speak English because it's like the easiest thing to just kind of agree upon. And so, you know, get to some big international event like this, like English is actually still the primary language. So it's pretty interesting. So that definitely was the experience I had.
Yeah. I hope that, hearing like this in Valencia, like it does get people willing to travel some and not be as intimidated. I know for me, like we were in Paris before heading there and I can speak three languages and it's such a weird feeling to not know a language. And in Paris and France, it's a little bit different because they don't love to speak a different language. They're very proud of their culture, which they should be. But it's not like a lot of other areas, like in Germany, they'll quickly just go to English for you. And in Paris is a little bit different. And it is an odd feeling not knowing the language. But as you mentioned, for most people, like anywhere you go, that's a bigger city. And especially an event like this, that they know they're pulling in crowds from not even necessarily the States, but, you know, Europe, everybody comes from everywhere. Like you go 2 hours in the direction from Luxembourg and you're in five different countries. So, or even more. So they're used to it, like you said. So, yeah. You know, be adventurous and pick a good, fun race out there.
And that's the thing too. Like, just like you said, if you're in France and then you clearly don't know how to speak the language and you're just going to order in English, they get mad. But in Germany, they didn't do that. Or at least in Cologne, it's obviously not saying I've been all over every section of Germany, but they were like, oh, cool. They were like, yeah, like let's bring that. This is cool. Like, let's just roll with this. And then in almost every experience I had, it was like very like welcoming for them to just be like, yeah, let's talk English.
They just mix it into their language, I feel like, a lot. Because like, again, there was the one girl that we were by for a hot minute and she was cheering and she would be cheering a lot in German. And then all of a sudden she'd be like, so awesome. And you're doing good. Like she would just every like sixth German saying, she would say that for no apparent reason. She doesn't know if the person running was German or American or anything like that, but it's just, and I would hear that every so often, even their conversations between themselves where they would drop an English phrase or something. I mean, the guy was swearing at you in English, so.
But I would say there is something so, back to the drumline, there's something so intense about a German yelling German at you to run faster. Like it just sounds so much cooler and so much more like intense and rough and rugged that you're like, let's go.
Okay,
like,
I gotta do this.
Like it's the language is so harsh that when they yell at you to run faster, like even if it's an old lady, like it lands differently. It's
like when your parents call you by your whole name.
Yeah.
You're like, oh crap.
It sobers you up real quick.
Talking about intense language, though, then we went to Amsterdam, and when they were doing the tour, we did the boat tour, and they were saying all these phrases in Dutch. Like, what? Like we were all like, wait, is that real? Like, is he joking right now? Because they just sounded like they had like a horrible case of the flu and like were phlegmy, and it's not a real word.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely an interesting experience. Yes, Amsterdam was fun.
Yeah,
that was a cool city. I was just reminded when I was talking about the people yelling in German, I was reminded of this thought I kept having in the last like 10K of the race, where I was worried about looking at people walking because I was afraid that I would be too tempted to walk. So if I saw somebody like spasming walking, I literally had to like, look away, like don't look at them. Don't even be tempted.
And I did see a few walkers come by before you did.
Yeah. I mean, just people just like cramping and just struggling. I mean, that's the thing about 26 miles is nobody is immune to what it can do to you.
Yeah. It's not a
joke. And if you keep, you know, you race often, and I've done over 20 of these now, and it's like, at some point you're going to get snake bitten by something. And I would say, this is probably the second most painful race I've ever run.
What was your first?
By far, my debut marathon.
Oh, okay. Chicago.
Yeah. That one I was literally delirious and wavering on the streets, and I forgot where I was at and how far a marathon was, and it was really bad. But this one was pretty close. I mean, I'm obviously older and I'm more seasoned now, and I have dealt with quite a bit more pain since then. And so you just know how to handle pain a bit differently. And so a bit more mature about that versus when I was 23, but it still hurt a lot. But I would still say that the race itself didn't make for that. The race itself was awesome. So, you know, in my top five marathons in terms of excitement and course, this is probably a top three, I would say.
I would say that I feel...
I really enjoyed my experience there. So I couldn't give it a higher praise.
I think a lot of times novice runners or runners that are kind of like an average, normal pace runner or slower, not at your level of running or higher. I think we think, because I know I used to think this, I think we think like people like you are training and running a race and you're going to finish it and you still feel great. You know, like you kind of feel like, and it's like learning the lesson that, yeah, no, anytime you run like 26 miles, like it's going to hurt. It's more like you either train for a particular goal or speed that you're going for, or you train to hurt a little bit less, but it's going to hurt. Like you don't finish, nobody finishes a marathon not hurting.
And that's the thing. When you watch a pro or an elite run a race and then they finish and it looks like they were jogging, well, you have to remember that they experience pain at a very often basis. Like, you know, during a typical training cycle, at least twice, if not three times a week, they are, you know, dipping their hand in acid. They are definitely feeling pain. And so you just get very comfortable with like how to run controlled with a lot of pain. And that's why it looks so easy, but it's not, it hurts. But it's just like, you're just so used to it that it's just like, whatever, like this is just our existence.
Our existence.
You know, it's just the way it is as a distance runner.
I mean,
it's
when you're running 100 miles a week, which is what a lot of those people are running.
But the volume doesn't get you. It's those workouts, man. It's just
that's what I'm saying. Like you're running the 100 miles plus you're having those two or three, like you just mentioned, times where it's going to like take you to there. Yeah, you get used to it. That's your existence.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, do you have any final points for your experience in Cologne?
No, I think, like I said, as a spectator, it was super fun. There was like, I definitely noticed so much energy, which was great to be a part of, even more so than when we were in Boston.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Culture,
it was definitely, they brought the heat for sure.
Yeah. And, I think it's a great race. It's a great city. Definitely recommend it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a good point. I mean, it's hard to hate on some of our great American races, but I mean, I'm running New York here soon and I've run Chicago and Boston and it's like, you know, this was up there. I mean, I don't know if the numbers were as high in terms of the amount of spectators like in Chicago or New York, but it probably was pretty close to Boston. I mean, the Boston, the last 10K is pretty epic. There's no denying that once you get Heartbreak Hill and beyond, but you know, there's definitely some droughts and this race had some droughts, but then it was also so unique in terms of the way they would, the course was set up. So you would get some pretty intense spurts. So
were the bridges set up and where the droughts were? Did that kind of help break that up?
A little bit, actually, yeah. That's yeah, great. Because, you know, a lot of the heavy, you know, spectator parts of the course were like in the kind of neighborhoody sections, you know, where they had a lot of cafes and restaurants and stuff. And so those were not near the bridges. Well, thank you guys for listening to another great episode of the Mind Body Marathon, and we hope you enjoyed this one. And if you know anybody that's looking for a fun international race, send them this episode, because I couldn't speak more highly about this one. Thank you. Dr. Leo here. Be sure to check out my new book, Faster Without Fail, Your Guide to Overcoming Injuries and Running Faster Than Ever. It is now available on Amazon. You could read reviews on the Amazon. You can check out what other people have said about it. But basically, if you want to revolutionize your running form and better understand how to stay injury-free within the sport, this is your guide. Feel free to reach out and let us know what you think of the book. I would love to hear your feedback. But again, please check it out on Amazon. Faster Without Fail. Appreciate it. Dr. Leo here. If you want to catch me in another setting, be sure to check out my YouTube page, Running Rehab, where you will find exercises on how to stay healthy with running, how to improve your running form, and a bunch of other tips and tricks on how to get over common injuries.